Hey guys, this is Cole Kublik from WJOX in Birmingham and the SEC Network, and you're listening to the AU Wishbone.
White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 620.
You're listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo!
The kick is good! Auburn wins! Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello, and welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment. And by people like you, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our very own Patreon.com family. That's you. That's you. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined as always by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
Well, John, it is the off-season of the off-season, so we have no football going on other than spring practice. It's kind of winding down towards A-Day, isn't it?
It is.
And we have a little basketball news, not a whole lot, but a few things coming and going here. So, what are you thinking right now about the off season? How are we going to make it until something actually starts happening again? We didn't even have a Formula One race this past weekend. It was agony. No football, no basketball, other than the Final Four, which I didn't even watch. And then no racing. I mean, what are we supposed to do? What are we supposed to do with ourselves?
Well, again, rest and recover, number one. But number two, I mean, the North Carolina Duke game was kind of entertaining, especially because Duke lost. So, that was all good.
I did see the very end of it because I'd actually forgotten it was on, and we went to the Botanical Gardens, and then on the way back, I was like, oh, crap, the Final Four, and I flipped it on, and it was at the last minute or so, and yeah, it was pretty cool, but other than that, I mean, we've got the build-up to A-Day, right, and A-Day is coming up in the next few days.
Saturday.
Yeah, there you go. Man, I used to love A-Day. It was like a highlight on my calendar, but it just, the last few years when I was able to go, it just didn't quite have the same... Like, you know, back in the day, in the late 80s and early 90s, they would actually play a competitive game, which was fun, and you get to see all the good players. And before it, we would have Jazz Fest, which was awesome. They'd have really, really, really good acts come in for that. And it's just not the same when there's nothing going on but the game, and the game is not even a game. It's just like a big glorified scrimmage. So I miss the old days of A-Day.
I agree. I think it's... We had years with the weird scoring systems. Do you remember that?
Oh, coaches,
like Tuberville would make up some scoring thing. Get it. They want to get the most out of the time, but if you want people to come, you got to try and make it entertaining too. So.
Yeah, it's an event. It's not just come watch us practice one more time before we, you know, take the break for the summer or whatever. But but A-Day is coming up, so. We got to talk a little bit about what's been going on in spring practice and a little bit about what we kind of want to see happen by A-Day. So what are your thoughts about spring practice so far?
I mean, we talked last week about, or the week before, about depth issues. I think there's been some injuries and that's held some guys out. And that's in this kind of season, it's always good or bad news, right? So it's the bad news is players are hurt, they're missing time, and you want them to be developing. The other side is many of the players are missing time or we know what they can do. We're good. And we want to see some of the other guys on the roster play to evaluate them. Offensive line's a position like that. Some of the more experienced guys, Council and Troxel, and those guys are not playing right now. But we're seeing the other guys, and that's good, right? Mm-hmm. We want to see, can those guys play? Can they play, and can the younger ones play next year? Are they going to be ready? And receivers, a position we'll talk about some tonight. We got a bunch of different guys playing there. I'm going to see what happens. We're playing some younger guys in the secondary, see what they can do. So that's exciting. But it's also, you kind of want to have the full force team out there to evaluate. As an example, Calzada's, you know, recovering from injuries and hasn't done a lot of stuff in practice. And so he's not really... you know, at the point to compete for the starting job, which they thought would happen. So it's really been, you know, kind of Finley and Ashford at the top of the quarterback race so far. So but it's really kind of an incomplete because I really believe Calzada is going to be in the race when he is healthy. So,
yeah, it never fails that the quarterback race is always what gets people's interest the most, and they always want to know who's it going to be all the way back in March or April. So the latest I understand is with Davis gone, we're down to a four-man deal, but really we're at a two-man deal because, as you said, Calzada can't really do anything but just take snaps and handoffs and stuff. They don't want him to re-injure that other shoulder. And then that
leaves... Gurner's still finding his way around campus, so...
Yeah, right. And so that really leaves Finley and Ashford, and we don't really know much about Ashford because he never started. I don't know if he ever played. Never even saw the field, I guess, for Oregon.
Just yeah, so he has that allure of the unknown. Now, we've seen Finley play. We've seen Calzada play. Nobody's seen Ashford play. So it's like you could take package A or package B or the mystery box.
Yeah, it's the
and
mystery
Ashford
box.
Is the mystery box of the quarterback derby. So I'm excited to see, you know, what he can do on A-Day.
He's got the size. It sounds like he's kind of a bigger guy than like Davis and these other running quarterbacks.
And he's a good athlete. So, I mean, he could be a baseball player, too. So.
Right, yeah. He's the one that kind of is a dual sport guy in a way. But, it's true that we really won't know everything until we see Calzada out there competing on an equal footing. Because when I read that, you know, we had five quarterbacks and yet T.J. Finley was the clear leader, I just kind of went, oh, boy, that's... And it's not because of... It's not that I don't like Finley himself. It's that we all saw, you know... what the team looked like on offense when he was the guy we had to go with at the end of last season, and it wasn't what I would call encouraging.
Sure.
So our first option and hope was that somebody encouraging would come in and kind of seize control of the quarterback battle, and for whatever reason, injury or lack of experience or whatever, that doesn't seem to have happened yet. But the freshman Gariner, he does seem promising.
Yeah. Again, I think he's the future, but I think I doubt the future is going to be whatever the Labor Day weekend. So I think he's the guy they picked to be the quarterback of the future for this team. They specifically recruited him and he for their system and stuff. So I think he's going to be the guy, but I don't think he's going to be the guy this year.
Yeah. Well, if he is, I mean, what does that say about? About all the other quarterbacks.
Yeah. If he is, that says one or two things. A, he's unbelievably awesome.
Yeah.
Or B, we're in real trouble.
Yeah. That's right. I remember years ago we had a quarterback that was kind of like Davis in a way, or like Finley, I guess, in a way. I'm not sure. I don't remember now that I think about it. And I remember thinking, you know, it's the classic, he's the backup, so let's let him get a chance. Let's get him get a chance. And I was talking to somebody that was a little more knowledgeable than me at the time back then, and they're like, look at it this way. If we start that guy, we're worse off than we think we are. You know, in other words, you think he's good because you haven't seen him play, but that person's like, I've seen him play, and if that's our option, then we're in trouble. So I hope that's not the case.
The most popular player in the team is always the backup quarterback.
Yeah, yeah. So, but it is always a fun game to play of, you know, who's going to end up being the starter and the backup and everything out of the four. But it's just we can't know right now because Calzada is still a mystery, really. And Ashford is a mystery to the rest of us.
Yeah, but we'll get some Ashford mystery resolution on Saturday.
So what are they doing differently, do you suppose, this year with new assistant coaches or coaches in new positions and stuff? Do you expect a lot of difference?
No, is the short answer. I mean, defensively, I think the scheme's going to be pretty similar. Offensively, I think it's going to be mostly similar. Again, I think it's going to be a lot of, you know, one back or one or two tight ends. And so quarterback and shotgun. I don't think there's going to be anything dramatically different formation or scheme-wise. Because I think, number one, Harsin liked what we were doing, kind of, even though we had changed the coordinators. I think he gave them the direction of that's the way he wanted the offense to go and the defense to go. So I think it's going to be roughly similar, but it'll be interesting to see, you know, the kind of things they do differently. And we may not see all of that in A-Day, but we might see something.
So on defense, do you think they'll play more man-to-man as was kind of called for last year and didn't seem to happen much?
I think so. But I think they'll mix it. I think it's not – I mean, we're not ever going to go back to the 100% man-to-man forever. You know what I'm saying? I think they're going to be – they'll want to keep the defense – they want to keep the offense off balance. So it's going to be man-to-man, and then it'll be zone, and it'll look like we're playing one and play the other, that kind of thing. So we want the quarterback to have to think about or to hesitate for a minute and not be 100% positive he knows what the coverage is before he ever snaps the ball. So.
In terms of our offense, the personnel situation we're in right now makes me think about the – you remember the ace formation?
Mm-hmm.
I remember it's what, like, the Birmingham Fire ran a lot in the WLAF. I don't remember who's run it since then, but it's where you have the five offensive linemen across the front, and then you have a tight end lined up on the line of scrimmage on each end.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have receivers split out wide, and one on each end, and then a single back.
Yeah. No, and that kind of two tight end formation where they're attached to the line of scrimmage, I think we will run that a lot. I think both to help block and because we have tight ends. We are going to play two tight ends a lot, especially, you know, if one of them is Landon King and he's kind of playing big receiver. They may not be attached all the time. They may be further out. Mm-hmm. But I definitely think we're going to line up in that sub. Just because we have guys that can run it. I think the one position group you say, like, we're good at is tight end. So,
yeah, now that you say that, I was thinking that it's kind of like the run-and-shoot formation, but instead of slot receivers, you have tight ends on the end of the offensive line. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what we got. If we had little guys, we'd run the, you know, something with little slot receivers, a four-receiver formation, but we got tight ends, so we'll be doing that.
Yeah, well, that's what we got, so no doubt about it. Who we got new that we haven't talked about?
Good question. A lot of the new guys haven't come in yet, right? A lot of the freshmen have not made their way to campus yet, so we won't be seeing them. Damari Alston and Camden Brown and some of those guys. But I think there are some other players. I think Colby Wooden's younger brother at safety is a guy that's making some plays. J.D. Rim is a big cornerback recruit making some plays. So I think those will be guys, new players to watch for. Imba, I don't think is, you know, going to play in A-Day because he's recovering, but that's a guy in the – Jeffrey Imba, the big defensive lineman, will be a guy in the fall. I think, you know, as a guy that's not new right now, but we didn't see a lot last fall, was Dylan Brooks, you know, the high-profile recruit that at one point was committed to Tennessee. You know, he was the highest-rated recruit in last year's class, and he didn't play a lot last year.
What position?
He plays edge pass rusher. Right. Okay. So we've got Eka Leota and we got Derek Hall and we've got this guy. Right. And so that's the three guys at that position right now. So obviously we have some guys coming in the class, but we need him to step up and make some plays this fall. And he's got the talent and ability to do it. So I think that's a guy on Saturday I want to see. I want to see some burst from him. I want to see what he can do.
We have a new running back coming in that's good, don't we?
Yeah. Damari Alston's the new running back coming in that's good. Again, we have, you know, Jarquez had surgery, so he's recovering.
Mm-hmm.
So we have Tank. We have Jordan Ingram, who is a guy from last year. And then we have, you know, the walk-on who just got a scholarship, who is, you know. So I think he's played, you know, we saw him a good bit last year in A-Day. I think we're going to see him again, you know, get the ball a lot on Saturday.
Yeah. I saw he was taking – the walk-on, I forget his name now, was taking snaps with – oh, man, not Finley. He may have been taking snaps with Ashford or Calzada, one of the two.
Yeah. Sean Jackson's the player we're talking about.
Yeah, Sean Jackson was out there. I can't remember if it was – I know they had Calzada at one end of the field just doing, like, handoff drills, so they couldn't – he wasn't throwing it and wasn't getting anybody in his face. And they had Ashford and Finley at the other end of the field throwing fades to the receivers, so hopefully not on fourth and one. So, who are we going to look to carry the offense this year besides Tank? Is it just 100% Tank? Give him the ball and get out of the
Tank
way?
Tank and Jarquez. And maybe Alston could come in and have a Jarquez-type season. We could have three, you know, productive running backs. I mean, beyond that, Landon King at tight end, right? And that's a guy that has a lot of ability. He's only a sophomore, but he's a – it's such a talented tight end that they're going to play him at receiver. So, because we need receivers and he's good getting the catching the ball and make a play. So I think that's a guy. And then I think still beyond that, it's the tight ends, right? So Shanker, Frazier, Fromm, those guys. So again, the receivers, you know, we kind of know what we have, and most of them, I'm still interested in Tavarius Dawson just because he's a different kind of guy. We'll have some true freshman receivers this fall, but you never know with them. But I mean, Tavarius Dawson is like 5'10", 160. So he's a small, speedy guy.
That's the Davis kid from a couple of years ago that was our big slot receiver because he was so little, remember?
Yep.
We've had a lot of Davises in the last 10 years.
Ryan Davis?
Ryan Davis, yeah.
He was incredibly productive. Again, if this guy is half as productive as him.
I was going to say, though, Jarquez Hunter didn't have a Jarquez Hunter season the second half of the season. He was great against the little teams, yeah. But when we got to the meat of the season, he kind of faded. It reminded me of who was the running back we got from Baylor, number 9, that came in?
Cam Martin.
Yeah, he reminded me of Cam Martin. He could be dominating against a lesser team, but you put him out there against like a Georgia, Alabama, or you know somebody like that, and he doesn't really do much. And Jarquez honestly had some pretty bad games the second half of the season, so I'm hoping that that was a result of other things and not just his own. You know,
yeah, I think he was getting beat up, but also I think he was I think he's going to grow and spend a year in the weight room and. You know, that stuff. I think he'll be bigger and stronger faster when he plays those teams again. So
let's look at the receivers a little bit. You named a few there, but, I mean, Shedrick Jackson in his, like, 17th year at Auburn, right? I think he came in about the time Bo graduated.
Eighth year senior, Shedrick Jackson.
Javarius Johnson went into the transfer, portal. And lo and behold, it spat him out. Back here on the plains. So here he transferred to Auburn.
It's a new school. He's new opportunity. He feels like a new person.
Same as meet the new school, same as the old school. Wish I had the Who on here. So, all right. So those two are our most experienced. And then you've got Raymond J. Malcolm Johnson Jr. Now you can call him Ray, or you can call him Jay, or you can call him Malcolm, or you can call him Johnny, or you can call him Sally, or you can call him Junior. I don't remember much about him other than I know he was on the team last year because I did that bit about him last year too.
And he's supposed to be fast. So that he's supposed to be a deep threat kind of guy.
Well, that'd be good. I'll take it. I'll take a deep threat. I'll take any kind of threat we can muster up. And you mentioned Tavarius Dawson, the little guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then J.J. Evans, I should remember that name. Xavier Capers is hard to forget. I feel like he's been on the team 100 years, too, and never played much.
Again, both those guys have been on the team a lot. They are juniors and did not play but last year, basically, right? Capers is a junior. J.J. Evans is a sophomore. He's hurt. He's had some surgery, so he's not practicing right now. Capers is a guy who didn't see the field last year, so I'm not sure they're going to trust him this year. No.
That's just weird. He was one of that whole crowd of four-star receivers we brought in about 2 or 3 years ago, and none of them really panned out much.
That's right.
The one that was actually pretty good is the one that left.
Yep.
I had high hopes for that crowd. That crowd was the one that reminded me a little bit of the crowd we got back in 2002, and then they all ended up being great. They all contributed for 4 years, pretty much. That was such a great class. Okay, what about Jay Fair? That name is familiar to me. Remind folks who don't remember him.
So he's the only freshman receiver that's on campus, and he'll play Saturday. He's a kind of a smaller speed guy from Texas. So I think somebody to keep your eye on, and if you're watching the game Saturday, you want to see somebody new make a play, that's the guy to watch for, I think. So the other two freshman receivers, Amari Kelly and Camden Brown, I don't think come on campus till the summer. So Camden Brown was the highest recruit, profile recruit of those. He's a much bigger, more explosive downfield threat kind of guy. So that, I mean, I'm sure he's ready for this year, but that's a guy to keep your eye on. So
earlier in the year, when we talked about the team, we were very deeply concerned about wide receiver. Do you still feel the same way, or is there anything that's happened that makes you feel any better about it?
Right now, I'm still very concerned about it. I mean, I don't think we have a bunch of you know, all SEC caliber players are difference makers at that position right now. I mean, we'll see. I think some have the talent and ability to do that, but they haven't done it, and we're going to have to see something. So, I mean, to me, this is a position of concern. If we play a team with good defensive backs, I'm concerned. Can our guys get open? Can they make plays? So we got a lot of development to do in this area. I think we have some guys with a lot of natural ability, but they got to develop, and then we got to put them in the right position to succeed. So I'm going to be keeping my eye on these guys.
Was it just this time last year that we felt like our receiving core was pretty good? And then I think we had Brian Stultz on that said the receivers are in trouble, that you need to worry about them. And we were like, what? And sure enough.
Yes. No, he was right. And 2 years ago, they were the strength of the team.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Schwartz, Seth Williams
yeah.
crowd. So that was a different play.
Man, no kidding. All right. So next episode, we'll look at the running backs. Is that the plan?
Yeah. We'll review A-Day, and then I'm trying to do one position. This is part of our plan to make it through the depths of the offseason.
When Shedrick Jackson is your number one receiver, I have to think that you're planning to run the ball a lot. He's a good blocker.
I was going to say, that is the plan.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. Well, we need more depth than just Tank then if we're going to run the ball that much, because I don't know that he can last the whole season if he's the only option at moving the ball, but we'll see. Meanwhile, over in Neville Arena, which I'm never going to get used to, but that's great, we have a new player, a new signee.
We did.
Johan
Trehor.
Yeah, I guess.
I don't think the last name's right. The first name is Johan.
YT. YT.
Call him Johan. He's a center power forward type who was originally signed, committed to LSU, and then decommitted once Will Wade's nefarious ways caught up to him. And he is a very high-profile recruit. He's a five-star signee. He's the second highest-rated signee ever for Auburn behind Jabari Smith.
Wow. Back-to-back years. Both of them bigger than Mustafa Heron and our point guard from 2 years ago that was so highly regarded. And, man, I was looking. I actually had to go find the list for working on the book the other day. And it's amazing how all of our top signees, like of the top 10, like 7 or 8 of them are from just the last 5 years or so.
Yes, that's right. Auburn's recruiting is in a different plane, a different stratosphere than it was. And this is just the latest symptom of that. This guy would have been the biggest recruiter in Auburn history prior to 3 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like if your football recruiting went from Mississippi State level to Alabama, Georgia level in like 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. And you're just like, how can this? It's amazing. So as Johan comes in, Kessler goes out as well, so we're going to need to replace Jabari and Kessler and go for that find a three-point scorer. So it's not a one-for-one swap, right? I mean, he's not the same as either one of them.
No, and he's actually kind of in between them, right,
yeah.
A little bit. He's not the defensive player Kessler is, but he's a good defender. He's not the shooter Jabari Smith is, but he's also a really good ball handler for a guy his size and a good offensive player. He's a better back-to-the-basket traditional post player than either one of them, I think, just in terms of having good moves. And
well, that wasn't their
doing.
Game. That
no,
wasn't
it wasn't,
their thing.
But it's so that it's different, right? But I think he can function, you know, in the way that Pearl wants all his bigs to function, facing the basket and away from the basket. Mm-hmm. And spreading the other team out, he can do that, and he can run. So that part is going to fit right in with he and the rest of this team. So
we still need a center, or we still need a forward?
No, I think he's going to be the center, and Jalen Williams will be the power forward, and Flanagan will be the small forward. I think we may still recruit, you know, another player, but we don't need, like, we must get a – you know, a power forward or whatever. And Jalen Williams would be really good. I think if we want to get somebody else on the bench, that's fine. Or, again, like you said, I think the priority is another shooter.
Yeah. Yeah, we need a three-point shooter bad, no doubt.
Regardless of position, we want somebody who is primarily a shooter.
So we have all three of our guards coming back, right?
Yep. And we got a point guard coming in, you know, and then our other big recruit is kind of a shooting guard, small forward, more small forward probably. So.
I was going to say, we'll have three point guards and only one shooting guard, and he's not like a real shooting guard. He's more of a, I don't know what KD is. I don't think most people know what KD is, but he's not your traditional shooting guard.
Attacker? Yeah. Psycho?
Pit bull.
That's it.
Yeah. Which is fine, but we still don't have a, like, you know, I always say we need a Bryce Brown, but who doesn't, you know, but that would be good. Somebody that can play really good defense on one end and light up the three-point shooting on the other end. It'd be really, really good if we could get that. So, Bruce, if you want to just go ahead. I'm sure Bruce didn't know that, so now we can just tell him, you know, Bruce, if you want to go ahead and get that, go and find that really good three-point shooter, that'd be really good.
Aisle three.
Yeah, just run over and pick one up on the way through Target. That'd be great, yeah. All right, so yeah, Kessler got Defensive Player of the Year, the Naismith Award. That's pretty darn cool. And off he goes to the NBA. We'll see where he ends up and all that. But it still kind of boggles my mind. Up until about 3 weeks ago, I thought he made a brilliant decision by coming to Auburn. And now I'm sitting here watching North Carolina leading for the national championship by 10, and I'm like, maybe it is.
But he would not be played as much played the same style, and so he would not be in the position he's in to go make millions of dollars.
He wouldn't be turning pro right now if he had played at North Carolina.
No, he wouldn't. He'd be on the bench for this team. So
yeah, absolutely. So as usual, our annual tradition of John and me watching the national championship game during the show. one day we'll get to do this and it'll actually be Auburn, but it's not this time. And by the way, I'll just say I wrote up about 70% of this past season for the book, the sort of the play by play, the beat by beat of it. And it was not fun to do a lot of it. In fact, I you know, it was one of those things where I went ahead and did it now because I wanted to get it over with. Now I can go back and do like the beat by beats for the other seasons without having to think, man, you know. And it does provide an interesting challenge for us because we got to make a upbeat good ending for the book. You don't want it to end on a complete down note. So, you know, but we can. We'll figure out. We can mention the new recruit. We can mention the winning the awards, Coach of the Year and Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year. And there's a lot of good stuff that we can put on there. And then, you know, the future is currently bright. You know, we got our coach for life and we got a new, you know, big player coming in, so it's always good. There's always good stuff. So, anything else basketball before we move to the midpoint of the show? Nope, can't hear you.
It's time to talk about the bracket pool, Van.
It is. Well, yeah, my team sucks.
yourself. I'm 35th. Okay.
Yeah, I'm. Yeah, you're way ahead of me in 37th. There's no doubt about that. So
I have left you in the dust.
Oh, everything was going so well, and then it just the wheels came off. And
I have to say this: the team leading the AU Wishbone Bracket Challenge is Patrick Williams' team. And he named it after one of your freaking soundboard clips from Kingdom of Heaven. Someone knows. God knows. And he has Kansas to win.
Yep.
But nobody has North Carolina to win. And he's in first, so I think he's going to win. And I want to say, is there some kind of karma here with this?
Someone knows. God knows.
What do you think?
Well, I like that like a third of the names of the people playing are like stuff from the soundboard. That makes me happy. I'm also happy that Boris is currently tied for sixth place. So
again, dusting you and I.
Oh yeah, dominating. It's so funny. I'm 37. You're 35. I'm 37th, and he's sixth.
Situation normal.
He's a small tiger, and he's killing us. So let me run through it real quick. There's a one, someone knows God knows Patrick. There's a two, which is Rich Reimer's.
I don't have facts to back this up.
Love it. Johnny O is tied for third with Carl Von D's picks.
I think Johnny O is Johnny Dent.
Oh, okay. And then Ann Kanjian, our great patron, Ann, who's been around forever with us, she's Florida Ann, and she's in fifth by herself. And then Boris, Russell Milling, and Clint Stewart with not coming through that door is tied in sixth. And I couldn't find that one. I don't know if I still have that one on here anymore, but there it is.
Larry Bird's not walking through that door, fans. Kevin McHale's not walking through that door, and Robert Parrish is not walking through that door.
So there is your top, basically, eight, because after that it goes to nine. In fact, I get the top ten. Josh is nine, and Tiger Eyes, R. Lane, is 10th. Okay. So there's how it stands, and yeah, like you say, there's three people that had Kansas, and they're all in first two, and they're in one, two, and three. And nobody has North Carolina, who is currently pulling away from Kansas in the first half.
Yep.
So, yeah. All right. There is no Formula One update this week because there was no race this past weekend. And as I say, if anybody's thinking about joining up at the Patreon and wants to play the Formula One game, there's only been two races. There's still like 20 to go. So you haven't missed a whole lot other than me bombing out in the first week because the stupid Red Bulls broke down. But other than that, okay, so meanwhile, we have to thank our patrons real quick, and then we will do the latest episode. I got my foot wrapped up in the headphone cable. Gosh, I almost broke the table down. Of Guess the Game. Jared sent in our newest Guess the Game. We're coming up on number 50, which is crazy. So www.auwishbone.com. www.auwishbone.com is the place to go. Hit the big orange button and become a patron, because we don't do ads. We depend on our patrons and not on stupid commercials that you don't want to have to hear. Here are the current folks keeping the show going. We have to thank Samuel Salvatore. I had an allergy attack tonight and I sound terrible. I apologize. Samuel Salvatore, Chris and Clinton Stewart, Carl Von Drunker, Dr. Crackham, Patrick Hayes, Bradley Blackman, Daniel Odom, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan at KSC, Logan Chilton, Matthew Flowers, Michael Kirshner, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kanjian, AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Brett Wiggins, your dirty chi name shall be Fetus. I don't get it, but I don't know. Bruce isn't harshing around. Chris Hilton, I basically invited folks to use more soundboard clips in their names so that I could, you know, just not have to talk as much, I guess. So Chris Hilton,
please clap.
There you go. Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, David Hegler, Earl Ricks, Eric Morgan, Bobby, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B. Let's see if I can make it through this whole list of names before I start having another sneezing fit. That'll be really fun for the audience. Old Mrs. Miracle Medical Staff, Algorithm and Blues, Paul Miles, Phil Davis, Reynolds Wolf. I think Algorithm was in like 11th, so he didn't get his name called out a minute ago. Reynolds Wolf, Rich Reimer, Rusty Owen, Sarah Browns.
Smoke weed every day.
What are you? Some kind of doomsday machine, boy.
Oh, it's so good. Steve Harlan, Theodore Gary. This may be the year that the softball hitting improves the point that Mickey Dean's critics quiet down, Bob Sammons. All right. War Eagle always, of course. WDE Richie, Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Auburn Blue, Blake Heron. There's Boris the Tiger, our sixth place currently. Brandon Smith, Carter Glaus, Cato the Barner, Colby Butler, Corey Smyre, Darius Benton, David Simpson, Diabama, Helping Van upgrade his installation. I'm going to get to that sooner or later. Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kenoy, Kevin Mahan, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Finley. Man, I hate hearing my voice right now. I know you folks are. Papa Todd, Patrick Williams. There he is. Play tough defense, protect the ball, take good shots, and rebound. Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Timothy, Tony Perry, Weagle 87. Insert favorite soundboard audio. Let's do... I like this one just for right now.
And March Madness, let's shock the world!
yeah. It'll be soon be time to come up with some new soundboard clips. Alex Nguyen, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Ben Hanshew, Ben Riggis, Brian Albanese, C. Braun, Charles Mooney, Chris Como, and finally, Colonel Dad. Congrats to Kentucky for beating UNC and Kansas in the regular season, but losing to St. Peter's in the tournament, followed by...
Please clap.
There was some talk of that yesterday on Twitter, which was funny. I love seeing the Kentucky accounts get on there and start like, you know, well, we did this and we did that. And everybody's like, just shut up. You lost to St. Peter. Shut up.
I think Van needs Ole Miss's miracle medical staff.
That'd be good right now, I'm telling you. Construction Tiger, Daniel Barnett, Elizabeth Donald.
We got to get better at celebrating.
I want early access to the basketball book. There we go. Hey, we've got somebody who just joined up, John. They just joined up to get early access to the basketball book, so now we got to do it.
I like it.
And I want to say somebody else, maybe Ann, also said the same thing. So there are people that are...
Ann said that, yes.
Yeah, so there are people that are wanting us to put the basketball book out in an early edition, maybe this late spring or in the summer. I'll buy this for a dollar. James Taylor, Jason the Weasel Skull Albrick, Jeremiah Schumann, John Samuel Schinker, Jingleheimer Smith. This is taking like 15 minutes tonight. I apologize. I'm just not feeling well. John Stubbs, John Zavachin, John Soundboard, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, JT Jarhead, Justin Bean, Kenneth Brent Reigns, a.k.a. Auburn Dad for Life. Loving Auburn means you have to...
smoke weed every day.
I don't write these, folks. I just... say what they tell me to say. Mark Squire, MVP, captivating Kathy Bright. Hey, Kathy. Paul Bankson. Up another play random soundboard clip. I'm going to play...
playoffs? Don't talk about playoffs? You kidding me? Playoffs?
I love it. And you know what? I'm going to do one more just to kind of like celebrate everybody. This actually came up at dinner tonight. Mira goes, oh, I got great news. And I said...
I got great news for you.
Auburn beat Alabama by 12 points.
No, this is important, honestly.
And she just looked at me like I was crazy, which was, in fact, probably accurate. Robert Drain, Royce Alvarez, Russell Souther, Ruth, and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, having trouble with my bracket. And then he says...
Someone knows. God knows.
Oh, I tell you what. Stephen Thompson, the Slinko family. Welcome aboard. This name is brought to you by Bubba's Discount Tire and Tax Service. That just strikes me as funny somehow. I need to get the old barbecue and back. Remember the barbecue and foot massage we had?
Yep.
Trevor Johnson, Brant Rumble, and Chris, plus our one-time and anonymous donors. I'm sorry it took about an hour to get through that, but we are through it, and it was fun along the way. And now it's time for Guess the Game. Here we go. Jared has sent in Guess the Game for this week. And I
bring it on. Who can it
be now? Hello, Van, John, the rest of the AU Wishbone family. It is, of course, Jared Albrick, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game number 47. Guess the Game number 47 is brought to you by Bill Miner. And let's give a listen to what Bill has for us for this episode.
Two receivers right to the shotgun. Back there with him to his right. The two wide receivers over there. Down to two on the play clock. They just get the playoff. Quarterback draw. Slices his way through to the two, to the one. Spins. He's in. Touchdown, Auburn!
That's exactly what this Auburn team needed. They ate the clock up over 9 minutes on that drive, and takes it in with a quarterback draw for the touchdown.
Okay, well, there you have it, folks, and I will see you in the hint file.
Wow. An Auburn drive that took 9 minutes. When I think about that.
A quarterback runs it in and spins at the goal line. Let's start with the announcers.
It was Rod, wasn't it?
So the time period is?
2003 through 2000. What was his last year? 19? Was this? Didn't he do the? The 2019 Iron Bowl was his last? No, the.
Think so.
What was Rod's last game? I'm sorry,
We're good. So we have a rough time period. Keep going though. You were gonna say something.
Well, no. What occurred to me was the 2006 South Carolina game where we had the ball the entire third quarter. Remember that?
Because the drive was so long. You're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, remember South Carolina came out of halftime leading by a touchdown, and when they got the ball back for the first time in the second half, we were leading by a touchdown. Because we came out, we got the kickoff, we went on a long drive, we scored, we did an onside kick, we got the ball back, and we did another touchdown drive, and it was in the fourth quarter before South Carolina with Spurrier ever got the ball. That's the only reason I think of that, though, is it fits the time period, and it would make sense that we'd have a long drive.
Who was the quarterback in 2006 when we played that?
It wasn't Cox. It was Cox, and we didn't have Cody yet.
It was Brandon Cox, right? So yeah. I'm skeptical Brandon Cox ran it in and spun at the goal line. That's the part I'm skeptical.
That's why I was saying maybe we had Cody Burns splitting with him, or was that 2007? I think Cody was 2007 that he was splitting time with Cox. So that's just the first thing that occurred to me. If you have a better idea, I will certainly entertain it.
I'm feeling a Nick Marshall here. I think it's a 13 or 14.
I remember why I knew that there was something important about when Rod died. Rod died in May of 19, so the last thing he did was Auburn in the Final Four. He didn't get to do the 19 Iron Bowl, but he did Auburn in the Final Four.
All right, so I'm throwing out Nick Marshall here.
So a 9-minute drive. Well, let's hear the. You want to hear the hint, or you want to play that again?
Let's go to the hint file.
Welcome to the hint file. Let's get rid of those bleeps. Give it a listen.
Two receivers right. Burns in the shotgun. Tate back there with him to his right. Billings and Smith, the two wide receivers over there. Down to two on the play clock. They just get the playoff. Quarterback draw. Cody Burns slices his way through to the two, to the one. Spins. He's in. Touchdown, Auburn! That's exactly what this Auburn team needed. They ate the clock up over 9 minutes on that drive, and Cody Burns takes it in with a quarterback draw for the touchdown.
All right, let's see what you guys come up with.
So it was...
You were right about the time frame.
Well, but if it's Cody, we didn't win a lot in 08 with Cody, and by 09 was when he switched over and we brought in the other quarterback, you know, with Gus. So... I think maybe that's the bowl game after the 07 season where we were switching back and forth between Cody and Cox.
Was that Virginia?
Clemson.
Clemson. Okay, yeah.
The Chick-fil-A or Peach Bowl?
Was Ben Tate.
Yeah.
Was that 07? I thought he...
Tate was there like 7, 8, 9.
Okay. And Montez Billings.
I don't remember.
Smith, Rod Smith. So
I don't remember the receivers.
Let's go with
07. 07 bowl game, Chick-fil-A or Peach, whatever they were calling it that year. I was at it. I just don't remember what they were calling it, against Clemson.
Here we are in the answer file, and if you guess that this was our beloved Auburn Tigers playing Florida in 2007, then you're the big winners. Thanks again to Bill Miner for sending that in. If you'd like to send in a suggestion for Guess the Game, you can send them to me on social media. I am at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. It's all at Yard Sale Artist. Or you can email it, just like Bill did, directly to me, Jared, that's J-A-R-R-O-D, at theyardsaleartist.com. Until next time, Van, John, War Eagle.
Well... We had the year right, even before we knew the quarterback. We were, I said 06, and then it was 07. But, yeah, we were right. We were close.
We were close. And I want credit to Bill Miner. That was a good one, a good game, and not the most obvious play in that game either. So,
well, that's it, too, is that there weren't a lot of contextual clues as to which specific game it was that year. So yes. I remembered Cody scoring against Clemson, but I guess it was in overtime that he did that. He had very similar to what they were just saying. So, okay. Well, yeah, that was good. That was real, real good job. And I like when we have to really think about it and be challenged. That's always good. So,
yeah.
All right.
Thank you, Jared, for doing that again.
As always, thanks, Jared. Yeah, we can't thank Jared enough because he takes time out of his busy schedule, usually on Tuesdays or Wednesdays, and shoots them right to me to go ahead and stash for the following Mondays. That's really good. I guess now it is time to bang the gavel.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone Podcast.
Secret agent.
All right. So what do we have this week, John?
All right. First question's from Doc Crackham, who says... In terms of football and basketball success the last 2 years at Auburn, what other SEC program would you compare Auburn to over the last decade? The first that comes to mind is Kentucky's average football team with an above average basketball team.
Thoughts? We've become Kentucky in every way.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Kentucky's been a little better than us in football in some ways.
Oh, geez. That's so true. Oh, man. Have you been hearing this debate that some of the national and SEC talk people have been having, that Kentucky is the best job if you're a football coach because, yes, because you can win a good bit and you're not expected to win more than like 8 games a year and you can stay there forever?
Yeah. He's not going to get fired if he doesn't – if he fails to win the SEC championship. He gets an automatic rollover contract extension if they win 6 or 7 games. So he's banking in that money. No expectation he's going to win the national title or go to the playoff.
I mean, Gus
and,
was
– and he, you know, he had – once every 5-10 years, they have one of those years where they finish, you know, second in the West in the top 10 or whatever.
I'm saying Gus is knocking in 8-5, 8-5, and then like a 9-4 – 10-3 every 5 years, and if we had the same expectations Kentucky did, Gus would have been coach for life.
That's right.
So it really does show you the difference in expectations.
I also just think, like, he's a good coach, and he's got the right setup now. They recruit heavily in Ohio. They get good players there because players want to play in the SEC. So they're getting good players out of Ohio to come to Kentucky and also recruiting Florida and stuff. So
In terms of who our program is like with football and basketball, this is going to sound crazy and you're probably going to scream at me, but we're kind of like Louisville about 6, 7, 8 years ago. You know, I mean, becoming a big-name basketball program and being kind of a mediocre middle of the pack to the bottom of the pack football program.
We watched North Carolina in the national title game. That's another one, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'll say again, I think this. I want listeners to weigh in on this one. Give us your best parallel.
I don't want to be Duke because our basketball program is fine. It doesn't need to be Duke, and I don't want to be Duke football. I really don't want to be Duke football.
No. All right, next question is from Bill Miner, who also gave us the excellent guest of the game tonight. He says, when Auburn wins another national championship in football or its first in basketball, would you rather be in a game that has a memorable finish like the kick six or rather a total beatdown like we did to both of tonight's basketball finalists 3 years ago?
Oh, man. It's a good question. Which is more satisfying, a beatdown or a last-second triumph?
I love the kick six. But as we have talked about many times, that was an incredibly stressful game.
Yes,
it was. That was a heart palpitation kind of game.
Oh, yeah.
And in the national championship game that came down to that, while it would be wonderful to win it, I think it would be very stressful to go through it. So I'd rather, again, if we're playing some national championship caliber team and we kick their rear end in the national title game, give me that. Low stress. And we could say, hey, it wasn't even close. We were number one by a mile.
Yeah.
So I like that for both reasons.
I want your thoughts on this. So I saw a very jerky Alabama fan, as if there's any other kind, that said, as it turned out, the kick six was meaningless. And I'm thinking, that's such an Alabama perspective, that the kick six was meaningless. Because what he meant was, we didn't go on and beat Florida State and win the national championship. Therefore, the whole thing was meaningless. And I'm like thinking, so it was meaningless to win the Iron Bowl. It was meaningless to win the state championship. It was meaningless to win the SEC West. It was meaningless to get to the SEC championship game. And it was meaningless to win the SEC championship game. And it was meaningless to get to the national championship game and come within one play of winning that.
Yeah.
How myopic do you have to be to think that that's the only thing that even matters? God, those people need a 4-8 season like I need a nachos right now. They need a 3-9 season and upside their head so bad.
Again, nothing lasts forever, and their day is coming when he retires, and they could sue each other in the power struggle afterwards. So
just makes me want to throw up, John. They don't appreciate anything.
No, but again, you don't have to acknowledge people with stupid opinions.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do. What are you talking about? Of course I do. Somebody on the internet was wrong, John.
Listen, I'm going to let you a little secret. Somebody else is wrong on the internet right now.
No!
And we're going to let it go.
Come on, man.
Yeah, you come to me with...
We don't have to engage with that person.
I didn't engage with that person necessarily. I'm just talking about it now because it made me mad. But I just want to point out that I got to...
Once and for all with this fiction.
Yeah, I got to dispel that fiction real time. It just illustrated to me how stupid the whole attitude is of thinking that nothing matters except one prize. You have to be so spoiled to get your brain to that point. It's just like I get so mad when Alabama fans say that Auburn is horrible and is the worst and ridicule us because we don't have the same accomplishments the last 15 years that they do. And I'm like, who does? Right? I mean, if you're the second best team in the country the last 15 years, you don't have the same accomplishments Alabama does. So that's not showing me up anything. That's just, yes, I realize you guys have won a lot the last 15 years because you went out and found a coach that could do that and take advantage of the natural advantages you already have. It just drives me nuts. It's just so myopic and it's so stupid. I just can't stand it. They really come close to ruining football for me just because they're so stupid. But anyway, just take a nice cleansing breath. Okay.
In a related, this is from Cato the Barner.
Yes.
Who said, and the subject line of the email is, coach you hate the most. And he says, I know this isn't necessarily related to Auburn, but there's not much going on right now, so do with it what you will. Outside of football, who are your least favorite rival coaches? He says, for me, it's Tim Walton, Florida's softball coach. Watching him get into a mid-game screaming match, first with the umpire and then with an Auburn fan this past weekend, reinforced the fact that he's a jerk. But this one defining moment to me was the Haley-Fagan altercation in 2017. Fagan's two older sisters played softball at Florida under Walton, and both were suspended in 2012. After beating Florida in 2017, Haley-Fagan chose not to high-five Walton in the post-game handshake and instead lowered her hand, leading to this 40-year-old man shoving a young woman in the shoulder as she walked past. P.S. The incident was about a month and a half before he won the SEC Coach of the Year. Fantastic coach, scumbag human being. Who have y'all got? Thanks, Cato, the AU Wishbone softball correspondent.
I'm glad we have one. We needed an AU Wishbone softball correspondent. So I'm glad he has created that job and then filled it. That's really good. We appreciate that. Seriously, that's awesome. I don't know.
So
is there a
non-football coach that you like the least? You hate the most?
Toto Wolf. It's non-football.
Okay. Is there a college basketball coach that you...
Come on, John. You know I am the greatest. I'm going to have Mercedes back there winning the Formula One, you know. Christian Horner can kiss my...
I don't pay attention to other sports except football and basketball. So if
all
I can't,
right, but is there a basketball coach?
That's what I'm. If I can't have football, then Cal is. Yeah, you know, I did enjoy when they were like talking about firing him because he's not. Mm-hmm. He's underachieving with what he has. I don't know. I don't really currently have anybody outside of football that I'm really all hepped up against. Honestly, what do you think?
Yeah, I. He was terrible, but I did not like the Georgia coach. I didn't think he was very good.
The Arkansas coach annoyed me a little bit.
I think he's a good basketball coach.
Yeah, he is.
I have to be annoyed by Will Wade anymore.
Yeah, no, don't have to worry about him anymore. He's done. The Tennessee coach has always gotten on my nerves because I didn't like him at Clemson, I didn't like him at Texas, and I don't like him at Tennessee.
Rick Barnes. So
yeah,
that's fair. It's a tough one.
I save most of my animosity for football, for football coaches.
Mm-hmm. You got that right. So I got to think about this one, but
yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, do we have any, around the SECs to do, or are we good for this week?
No, man. It's A-Day weekend. Set your, either watch the game or set your TV to record it, and then we will come back next week and talk about it. So if you have thoughts, if you are there, if you're the AU Wishbone correspondent on the scene at the game, we'd like to hear from you as well.
Oh, yeah.
And what the experience was like, and if you agree or disagree with our feedback that A-Day was better before. So
there you go. Yeah, I would like to hear what people have to say about that for sure. Well, it's halftime of the national championship game, unless I'm reading my little phone wrong, sitting here on my desk, and it is currently North Carolina doing way better than we thought.
We're taking it to them.
Could we have an 8 seed win the national championship? I don't know if we've ever had a – I don't know how long – I know we probably have, but it's been a while, hasn't it?
What was Villanova?
Yeah, that was a while back.
They were an 8 seed, I think. NC State maybe was in that ballpark too.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's been a while, but it's exciting.
It is, yeah. So, but it's not really like the kind of team that's usually an 8th seed and does like that. It's freaking North Carolina. So, all right, I guess we're going to wrap things up then and get on out of here, and I'm going to go take a large amount of medicine and go to bed after I get this thing put together. So any final thoughts?
Where are you going? Enjoy the offseason.
Enjoy the offseason. Enjoy A-Day, and we will see you guys again on Monday. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.